Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Queer Times.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christian Becker.
I'm Harrison Fish.
Welcome to Queer Times, a podcast.
How are you doing, Christian? You're at your house.
I'm at my house.
Not to blow up your locale, but...
Do not share my location. Yeah, I'm at my house, a little work from home today.
Slay.
And I realized, like, wow, what a cute lamp. So let's...
It is.
Let it ride, you know? I don't know what that is behind me, but... Oh, it's just hand sanitizer. Here we go.
There
we go.
Okay. Don't look in the background of mine. I didn't check.
Everyone's going to be looking now.
Yeah.
I'm good. Getting ready for the season. We're getting ready to launch Foxy. Did you? You know what I realized we didn't talk about last week, and probably for the best because I harped on it so much the last time this happened. But Friday was General Strike May Day. Did you General Strike? Did you May Day? You did. Me too. Good job. And Topless Tours also did. Because I know the last time this happened, we were like, well, what will you do when you could actually be making money? And we were like, nah.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard that it might be something that they try to do every Friday. Yeah, I mean, listen, I need a few reasons to be like, don't spend money. I used to do what was called No Money Mondays, where I like just would not, because, you know, you go on the weekends, whatever, and I would always be like, right, on Mondays, you got to get by with whatever. Whatever you got.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe it's no money Monday through Friday, the way this economy's going.
Literally. Mine is kind of like, let's spend as little as possible every single day I'm alive. You know?
Yeah, I don't do that. Should. I don't. I just don't. I know this is dumb because you have to value money, but I also never really want it to have too much control of my life. I just want to make sure that I feel like I'm being compensated appropriately for my time and that I have enough to live, you know?
Yeah. I feel like the things I used to like enjoying spending money on aren't enjoyable anymore because of how expensive they are.
You mean like dick?
Sorry. No, I've never spent any money on that.
You shouldn't have to. You shouldn't have to with that face. What?
Exactly.
Right.
But basically, it's like, I used to love going out to eat at restaurants, but now it's like, the experience is getting worse, the products you're being served are getting worse, and it's twice as expensive.
No, there's no, quality is very hard to come by.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do come by it, you have to pay out the wazoo for it, which is okay.
Yeah.
But it does lead to a more select, yes, I'm not like, oh, let's just run and grab a bite that we know is going to cost us $70.
Right.
I'm definitely fine tuning all the things. I was one of those coffee go getters, right? Like that used to be how I started my day every day, was like walk to the coffee shop, get a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And when it was just me, that was fine. And then it was like, oh, and a girlfriend. Okay. So now there's two coffees every day. And those are like, you know, it used to be like $10 to get a couple coffees. And now it's like $20 to get a couple coffees. And
yeah.
So that's, kibosh on that. Are we allowed to say kibosh? And just like the fine tuning, like making sure that I'm going to the grocery store at the beginning of the week and there's things for breakfast, there's things for multiple meals, not just the dinner, right? Because it was always like, oh, I'll grab
a sandwich from wherever.
Yeah, whatever. And then you do the math and you're like, oh, that sandwich would have paid for a whole week's worth of sandwiches.
Yeah.
If I just bought some fucking eggs.
I mean, I don't know. The thing about P-Town is like, you do want to go out and experience and go out to eat and do those things. So I would find places that I could do it that I felt were more affordable. Like I loved going to local 186 because you could get a burger and a soda that is fantastic and spend $25, which for a sit-down place is pretty cheap. Farland has $10 sandwiches, which are delicious for a lunch.
I don't know anymore, but...
Oh, when I lived there, back in the day when I lived in Provincetown.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, these are the times that they said would happen and they have happened. And so now we just wait and see what happens next and we're growing a bunch of vegetables. I'll tell you what.
Yes. There is a little bit of news happening within the restaurant industry, which I do feel like goes along with the rest of what we're talking about in this episode, which is you've worked in restaurants and spaces like that before. So I'm sure you know of Sysco.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Sysco is kind of a grocery store for restaurants. If you think of anything you can get in a grocery store, you can get through Sysco, but it is packaged in a way that is better for a restaurant.
And there's only like two, right? It's like Sysco and US Foods, right?
Yes.
The two suppliers to most large-scale commercial kitchen operations.
Exactly. A lot of people turn their nose up at Sysco because they're, like I said, you can buy anything that you could buy at a grocery store. So you can, if you walk down that center aisle in the grocery store, you can buy the frozen mozzarella sticks. You can buy the little things that you can throw in your air fryer in the oven and have a snack. You can also buy those things through Sysco. And there are certain restaurants that buy those mozzarella sticks, jalapeno poppers, whatever, drizzle some sauce over the top and sell it as a restaurant level thing. Sysco is also a place where you buy bell peppers, onions, garlic powder, paprika, chicken. It is just like you can go to a grocery store and buy chicken and lettuce and broccoli. You can also go there and buy all the pre-made food. And a lot of people think any restaurant that has a Sysco truck parked out front is just microwaving and deep frying food to sell. And that's not the case. But the reason I brought this up this week is Sysco Foods just bought Restaurant Depot, where Restaurant Depot isn't as much like Sysco or US Foods, where it's like they'll deliver to your restaurant every day. Restaurant Depot is a brick and mortar restaurant grocery store. It's where you can go.
Sam's Club. It's Sam's Club for restaurants. It's BJ's for restaurants. It's Costco for restaurants. I loved Restaurant Depot. It was always like, when you were out of something, you're like, oh, someone needs to go to Restaurant Depot. I was always like, I'll go. Yeah. I want to go to Restaurant Depot, see what they got.
Yeah, you can get a day pass in certain locations. And I went when I moved into this new apartment because I'm like, why am I going to buy a garlic powder that's this big for $5 when I could buy one that's this big for $7? So my kitchen looks a little like a restaurant.
Perfect.
Yeah.
That's a great idea. But Sysco purchased Restaurant Depot.
Yeah.
Which is not good.
Not good.
Just like another step towards the monopolization of it all.
Exactly. I mean, when it comes to restaurants, there's Restaurant Depot. There's one other one that's similar. I can't remember what it's called, but it's the same kind of big box store for restaurants. And then there's Sysco and US Foods. And now between those four things, there's now three of them.
Boo.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish you would hurry up and get over with.
Yeah, put me out of my misery.
But no, not that. No, don't put me out of my misery. I like my fucking life. I got a hot girlfriend. I got a cute dog. I love my job. But like all of this could just like, if the late stage could expedite the situation.
Yeah. Like it seems like we've been in a late stage capitalism for too long.
250 years.
Exactly.
This year, the beginning of the end for whatever this is.
Speaking of my new apartment, though. I was just telling Kristen about something that I found out, which seemingly goes hand in hand with everything we're going to be talking about today. So I moved into this apartment about 4 or 5 months ago. It is a lovely apartment when you view it from the lens and perspective of the housing market, of the world we live in right now. It's a fairly spacious apartment. I scrubbed it clean and it's great. But I will say that my rent is $2,000 for a one-bedroom apartment. There are 36 units in this building that is all rented out for $2,000 a month. So if you do some simple math...
It's all one bedrooms?
Yes.
Okay.
And so if you do that simple math, that's $75,000-ish that this apartment building brings in. I don't know how the ownership is actually made up, but I think an apartment building that brings in $76,000 a month should have a certain level of upkeep. And let me just list a few things that baffle me in my apartment building. When I moved in, there was no medicine cabinet. It was just a mirror with like a little ledge. And as I kind of delved into what it actually was, this apartment, the building's very old. It's about 100 years old. And there used to be a built-in medicine cabinet that the shelves broke. Mm-hmm. So rather than fixing it, they went to the Home Depot and imagine it was whatever they could find was the cheapest, which was a mirror with a shelf over it and just put it over the top. Then apparently that mirror broke. And rather than replacing the piece that they had put on, they went to, I'm guessing, Walmart and bought one of those absolute like $4 mirrors and glued it over the top of it. And that's just kind of the vibe of the apartment.
I mean, I think that is what we're seeing all over everywhere, right? Is that
yes.
If you are a renter, go fuck yourself. How come you don't own something? Like, I feel right. like that is the general vibe, even with good apartments or good landlords, you know? Like, mm-hmm. I think that's just, we're in that world of there's such a disconnect. You know, when you go way back to how landlordship worked, it was generally someone bought a place that had two apartments and one of those apartments was rented out, but the owner lived there. And so there was this thing where you had to see the person who was providing your housing regularly. And mm-hmm. then that person had to see you and had to look at you and know who you are and maybe even have a vested interest in your health and well-being, right? Where now it's like an LLC owns it and who knows who the LLC is and what's the, and nobody, the actual owners have somebody to manage it who's getting paid not enough to manage it, probably in exchange for their housing. Right? Like, it's just capitalism.
Yeah. And like I said, I don't understand how the ownership of this building works, but I have a theory. There is a person who is like a property manager mm-hmm. who lives on site. And I have a feeling that that is indeed the owner. Mm-hmm. But he kind of, I don't want to say pretends, but he is like, oh, I'm the property manager. I'm the person. So he has an excuse when you ask to fix something. He goes, oh, they won't give me the money to do that. That's my theory.
I bet you, not trying to blow up your theory or anything, but you could probably find out on the internet who owns that building.
Well, after like what happened,
wherever
after
you
what
are,
happened this yeah. morning, I will be looking into it.
Which what is, happened this morning?
So the biggest thing, like I said, I scrubbed this apartment top to bottom. There were some closets that smelled a little like cat pee. I think it's because the previous owner or a previous owner kept the litter box in there. So what I would do, I cleaned it as good as I can. I got the smell out, whatever. The one thing I was unable to clean were the windows. There's 6 windows in my apartment. They are all extremely old. The glass panes are not connected to the frame in certain points. Like I was Windexing the windows and I'm like, oh, I'm going to push this window frame out of this window. So I kind of let them be because I was afraid I was going to break them. And now over the past few months, like the windows rattle when the doors open, the front door downstairs slams and the windows rattle. When it's really windy, they rattle and bits of the window have begun flaking off.
Right.
And I thought to myself, latex paint doesn't flake. The type of paint that flakes is lead paint. Right. And like I said, my apartment is 100 years old. The windows, I'm...
And by flake, you mean chip.
Chip.
Right, like
yeah,
chips
exactly.
of paint, yeah.
When the front door downstairs slams, bits fall off the window. And this window is next to my bed. So this morning, I Amazoned some lead paint testing little Q-tips and you dip the Q-tips in water, rub for 30 seconds. And if you turn it over, the spot where that was rubbing, if it's purple, it means there's lead present. I dipped with water. I started swiping and it was just leaving a red purple stain behind.
Right.
So it's very clearly lead.
Okay. But fun fact, approximately 80,000, 83% of Oakland rental units may contain toxic lead-based paint. Particularly,
right.
particularly in buildings constructed before 1978.
But lead paint covered up by latex paint is safe. Lead paint that is flaking off is not.
Right. But here's the thing about what I'm finding from the internet is that landlords must disclose known lead hazards and maintain surfaces to prevent dust and chips. However, landlords are not legally required to test for lead. So that seems to be, according to the internet, in this middle ground of if they test and they know, they have to tell you. But if they don't test, good luck.
Right. But there are also other ways to know without testing. Meaning, yeah. Everything I just described, 100-year-old windows have lead paint on them. And you viewed with your eyes that they're chipping.
Yeah, I mean, great. Bring that to court. You know what I mean? Like,
I will.
I hear what you're saying, and I agree, but you won't have a case because it seems to be how it works there based on
my first call after we're done with this will be to a tenant's rights advocate.
Yeah, it definitely should be. Let's see. There is a healthy homes department that you can reach out to, and also a lead safe housing registry. Mm-hmm. And a lead safe homes program. So it seems like there are things to do there. It just also seems like there's a lot of leeway for owners not having to do anything.
Yeah. I mean, I don't really have a reason. I mean, when I bought the lead testing Q-tips.
Except your love of eating paint chips. And we all know that is.
They taste so good.
Right.
No. But they send you about 50 of them. I have no purpose for them. I'm going to make a little sign, put it in the lobby of my 70 or my 35 unit apartment building.
He's an activist.
Say, hey, listen, take one of these Q-tips. I just discovered lead paint in my apartment. And some of the windows have been replaced, but not all. And yeah.
You're going to get new windows?
There's ways to fight back.
You're going to get some new windows?
Well, definitely.
I love that story.
Well, I'll keep y'all posted.
I'm still stuck on you Amazoned lead test strips this morning and you already got them to your house?
I ordered them yesterday.
Oh, okay. I was like,
they arrived
wow.
this morning.
I knew cities could do stuff, but wow, that was impressive.
And before anyone drags me for Amazoning them, I went to a Home Depot a couple days ago and the exact same container of lead testing things was $30, and I found it on Amazon for $11, and there's no difference between Amazon and Home Depot.
I think the best we can do is be mindful about the ways. Like, mm-hmm. I have been struggling with that intersection of affordability and social responsibility in ways of, like, I'm ordering things for a not-for-profit that I have to order every year for these 8 kids that come in, and, like, mm-hmm. I try my best to get as much as I can at the Ace in town. We have a house account there. But at the end of the day, there is this, what is this line of, you know, do I pay twice as much for something locally when I have, I think that everyone is on their own journey with how they want to engage with capitalism. Mm. And everyone is afforded different positions in how they can, you know, like there are a lot of people who certainly can't pay $30 for those strips, right? And need to, mm-hmm. and need to order from Amazon. And I don't know, maybe I'm going soft in my old age, but everyone do what is best and try to be a little bit mindful of the general community and your need to be personally responsible for yourself for a community to function.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly when capitalism is about the movement of money from beneath to above. And if one of the biggest things you can do is not allow your money to move upward as much as you possibly can. And that's, you know.
Yeah, move it side by side.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Speaking of, just since we're here right now, did you watch Met Gala?
I didn't watch the Met Gala
right,
red carpet.
Right, because you're not that person. You will watch
I did watch last year, and I love Teyana Taylor. She's fantastic, but she was the host of the red carpet and she was so bad at it that like it was a camera where they would come in front of the camera, they'd interview side by side, and her back was to the camera the entire time because she was interviewing this person and she didn't understand that you have to cheat out.
Also, and she also probably just had her own phone on a thing because otherwise the camera person, like if there was a camera person there, that's their job is to be like, them. Hey, you need to.
This yeah. was the which Vogue is, official which is, live stream.
It, you know? I don't think that, and I think that is also to the point that we're talking about how, you know, used to be that would be a two-person job. That would be a job where there'd be a paid professional camera person mm-hmm. to set up a camera and get the shot right. And now, because of the technology that we, you know, you got a new iPhone Pro Max, you've got a pretty great camera for right. something like that. Just two people talking on a red carpet outside, no studio lighting, whatever. I mean, this is another extension of cutting all the costs as much mm-hmm. as possible and making one person do the work of two.
Also hiring someone like to and interviewing people is a skill that people have and that other people don't have. And she doesn't have that skill that and I feel like maybe they should have figured that out before they asked her to interview people for 3 hours.
Does she have a following?
Yeah, she's Teyana Taylor. She was nominated for an Oscar. Like,
exactly.
She was on my Super all, Sweet 16.
But that's all they care about.
Right.
Right. Like, it's and really also, just...
her questions were like, oh my God, this dress. Oh my God. Wow.
Well, I mean, it's not the place for hard hitting interviews.
No, but like, wow, I love this dress. I really loved what was the perspective of the designer? How did you take the theme and work with your designer to create this incredible look?
That's what they said, or that's not what was said?
That's a question that you could ask when interviewing someone.
Oh, okay. But right.
I'm saying her questions were, wow, this dress. Oh my God, right. Amazing. Now yeah. talk. Like, that's not a question.
Right.
But I will say, maybe this episode is about my conspiracy theories, but about a week ago.
Just this episode?
About a week ago, I saw an article about how the leadership of the Costume Institute, which is the organization that the Met Gala supports through its charity, mm-hmm. basically said that we are frantically trying to become solvent and to be able to support ourselves because the Met Gala used to be a dinner that we threw for as a fundraiser, and now it has become this enormous thing that it's throwing the Met Gala is a bigger job than running the Costume Institute. So they're trying to pull away a little from this. And
how much does it make? Like does the I don't understand the economics of the gala or how. I know people are invited. I know Anna Wintour has to invite them. I don't know if it's a sponsorship situation. Didn't Amazon basically buy it?
Yeah,
but didn't basically Bezos, like buy the Met Gala?
I think the idea is that it's a big party. Used to buy tables and then invite celebrities to wear their outfits to sit at their tables.
Okay.
So, and I think a table is something insane, like $800,000 or some wild stuff like that. So designers would buy a table, invite celebrities to sit at that table, dress them, show off, and support the Costume Institute. And I think it's gotten out of hand and become something that's so much bigger than that. And one thing I've seen, and this is where my conspiracy comes in, over the past few days, I've seen half a dozen TikTok videos that are defending the Met Gala, all using the exact same script. Like, all of them start with, before everyone gets on TikTok and starts saying that they're watching the Met Gala from District 12, and you'll have to remember that this is a charity. It supports this. It supports the Costume Institute. And the only reason I think it's a bit of a conspiracy is I've seen six of them with all that start with, before people start making TikToks about watching the Met Gala from District 12.
I mean, I think that, you know, the thin line between what is a conspiracy and what is collective consciousness, right? Like, I think that everybody this year specifically felt gross watching it. And yeah. the most culturally well-known reference is The Hunger Games. And so, I don't know. I feel like there's so many TikTokers. Like, do I think it's very possible that the Met Gala spent a little bit of a budget giving some influencers, like planting influencers to say things? Sure, of course. I don't even think that's conspiratorial. I think that's marketing, right? Like, I don't think that's a conspiracy theory. I think that's how the industry works at this point in marketing, is you pay people to say things for you, you know? But I also think, and this is something KT and I talk about all the time, something she had said is that, you know, the reason conspiracy theories are so rampant is that everyone can intuitively feel the wrongness of things right now. Can their intuition is searching for blame for this collapse, this inequality, this wage gap, this collection of wealth at the top. And instead of, you know, it, just trying to place it onto something, you know, and so I think that, number one, I wouldn't say that, no, they didn't do that. But number two, I would also say that it could just be a lot of people. I, you know, KT and I were like, do we put on? We're like, it actually doesn't feel good or fun. And, you know, we love some of those. I love Paige. Your girl Paige was there, right? You know, there were people who we love and respect in their art form, but also, and people that we recognize have to do it, right? Like, does Connor's story do it or not? Probably. First year actor needs the exposure. Agent probably said you have to do it, right? Like, it's, but it does feel like, see, I would be more of a conspiracy theorist saying that, oh, the costume museum is done with the Met Gala. Yeah, I bet they are, right? because it's, you need to be done, because literally the rest of the country is telling you, by next year, we know where everybody's going to be, and we're going to make it a buffet, right?
Totally. This is
basically like, I mean, if gas prices are $6.50 or whatever the fuck they are, like, don't shut up with your dress. Even Bad Bunny with his old man face, right? Like, with his Will Ferrell. Did you see Bad Bunny?
No. What do you
look it up right now?
Did look he up. Do a
He did costume art. Just look up Bad Bunny Met Gala and tell me it doesn't look like Will Ferrell playing Colonel Sanders.
I love that.
I really love that, because I feel like it was...
Totally.
When you're somebody who's that sexy, who like just drips sex, and you're like, oh, they want me to be sexy. And you're like, actually, old sexy. Because I mean, old isn't sexy, but...
I would.
I know you would.
I will say... If I wasn't looking that as deep as we just delved into the idea of the Met Gala, I think what annoys me is, like, this is the Costume Institute. For 99% of people are wearing haute couture custom. And so many people just show up in a dress, you know? I'm like, do something wild. Do something crazy. Do something interesting. That's what it's supposed to be about.
Is this Ben Stiller's boring accountant suit?
Was he? Well, I...
Ben Stiller looked like a very well-dressed public defender.
Right. But the biggest person, I think, was the biggest letdown was Jeff Bezos's wife. And not that I expected anything more, but basically Jeff Bezos just married this woman. It's so clear that she wants to be a fashion girly so bad. They basically bought Vogue for her, bought the Met Gala. Then she shows up in Schiaparelli, which is one of the most artistic haute couture houses that I would think of when I think of art and creativity and avant-garde. And she looked like a housewife arriving to the reunion, you know?
I mean, I guess so. She was also a chair.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you remember what Lady Gaga did when she was a chair? Beyonce was a chair. Did you see what she did? Like,
no,
do
I didn't.
Something.
Tell me.
Beyonce had a mesh, like a nude dress that was encrusted to look like a skeleton. And then she had black and gray feathers like 40 feet off the back of her dress.
So, all right, but here's the question. Not that I'm here to defend whoever the new Bezos lady is, but what's her name? Lauren, whatever. If they pretended to be creative artists, I would be more pissed. Like to be honest, like the reality, they look like they are. They're basic bitches with money.
Mm-hmm.
And they look like that. And I dare say maybe some artists, maybe some designers are like, no, actually, don't try to be a groundbreaking creative, even in your presentation of my art. Like, you're a boring basic bitch, and you get an elevated Housewives reunion dress, right? Like, I just feel like these are, I don't expect these people to be creative boundary pushers when they're not. Because if they were, they would have already, like, used all that money for us to have healthcare, food, and housing. They're right. not creative groundbreakers. They're
but I guess I know the reason, the answer to this question. But if you're not...
I'm going to tell you what it is anyway.
If you're not an interesting creative person, why buy Vogue? Why buy the Met Gala? Why are you there if you're not an interesting creative person?
What else are you going to do with all the money?
Like, exactly.
You can't have literal billions burning holes in your pocket and just be like, well, Vogue is respected. Let's do it. I mean, Washington Post, no one said they were journalists, right? Like, this is just what happens when boring people have too much money, you know? And then the flip side is when they're not boring and they have too much money, because I don't particularly, like, Elon is annoying, but I don't think he's boring, right? You know, like, at least he's like, to the moon and, you know, whatever, right. to Mars, whatever. You know, I don't know. I just feel like I'm not surprised that they showed up looking basic because they are not groundbreaking creative artists.
I mean, do you know who Daphne Guinness is?
Any connection to the beer?
I think so. She's a socialite that maybe I'm wrong, but I'm fairly certain it's because her family started Guinness.
Okay.
She's a socialite. A mega rich, but she's known around the world as being one of the most creative, fashionable people in the world.
Great.
You can be cool and creative and fashionable. You just can't use your money to buy it. And granted, she's using her money to buy haute couture pieces and stuff, but it's because it is who she is and who she wants to be.
Exactly. And this is somebody who thought, I'm going to marry Jeff Bezos.
And be cool? No.
And be cool? Because, like, he's now turned into an evil villain?
Only at True North Stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Yeah. Should we talk about Disney's layoffs?
You know more about this than I do, but Lord knows I can muster up an opinion quick.
Definitely. So Marvel, a few weeks ago, Disney did company-wide layoffs of about 1,000 people. This was from all, they were franchise people, comics people, TV production, finance, legal, and visual development. But the biggest story that has come out of these layoffs is that they entirely got rid of Marvel's visual development team. And what Marvel's visual development team did...
Like animators?
Animators are involved in this group, but basically what these people... What their job was to translate these stories and these comic books and the visual elements of that into what that looks like on the big screen. And basically, the idea is, like, you go back to old Black Panther costume or the comics and you see what he looks like. And you see what he looks like on screen now. And there's similarities, but there's differences. It's been amped up. It's been modernized. And basically, that's what these people's jobs has been for the last 20 years. And what really blew this story up was Evangeline Lilly, who is an actress. She's probably most known for her star turn, which was in the television show Lost. She was the main character in the television show Lost, but she's part of the Marvel Universe because she plays the Wasp, which is a side character of Ant-Man. So there's been about 3 or 4 Ant-Man movies. She's been featured in the Avengers and other crossover things within Marvel. But she made a video about a person that she's good friends with who got laid off, who was a member of the visual development team. And she basically was like, these are the people that have created what Marvel is today and has turned it into the multi-billion dollar franchise that it is. And she speculated that these people are being let go because they plan on using AI as their visual development team moving forward, which is like, hasn't been proven, but based on the face you just made, you're like, duh, of course it is.
You were a third through this story. I was like, yeah, no, that's actually a job that AI could probably do fairly effectively right now.
Right. But if you asked AI, and this is the big sticking point that I feel, is if you ask AI, make a superhero based on what the hell ever, made to look like a Marvel superhero, what is the creative property that they're pulling off to base that on?
Yeah, and but all of that belongs to Marvel. Because when you are and I say this as somebody who, I won't reveal any names, but I had friends who worked for Fisher-Price. And when we were doing shows, I had a guy who would do designs for me, and he couldn't sign them or take any credit because Fisher-Price owned his creative output, right? And so in a case like this, in exchange for that salary that they all got, I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying I agree with this. But what I understand the mechanics of it to be is that when you are a salaried employee, they own your intellectual property in that field of creativity. And so whatever you generate while getting that paycheck belongs to Marvel. And so what these AI bots will, what these AI employees will do is, you're right, it'll go through all of that artwork that was created by humans. But those people who receive their salaries chose to create things for Marvel that then owns it, you know?
Yes, I agree and understand that that is the case, but I feel like...
I'm not saying it's right.
Right, exactly. But I do feel like we're in a moment right now where a lot of conversations are being had about AI, and I think this is a conversation that needs to continue happening, because when these people, when these members of this visual development team signed that exact contract saying that they, that Marvel and Disney owns their output 20 years ago, in the mid-2000s when this team was developed, the idea that someone would be able to then take that intellectual property and use it to eliminate them, but while still making property based on their work, like, that's not okay. And I feel like needs to be addressed now.
I don't think it's okay, but I don't think it's, they had no concept that progress could eliminate their position, because we already, particularly in the vein of animation, because, you know, how did animation start? Literally hand drawing scene to scene to scene, and then a computer was able, right? So like this particular genre, I think, has seen so many technological advances that eliminated jobs that, if anyone would have seen it coming, I feel like somebody in animation should have seen it coming, even though, again, not saying it's right, but like, animation is one of those industries where, like, you used to, you know, you look at old Walt Disney stuff and they had to draw every fucking movement that Mickey Mouse made for like a flip book, right? Like, that's where it started. So it's not good. I think that those people should be compensated in some way. You know, what is the future? Some sort of a hybrid contract that says, you know, every time your contributions get used, we'll take a portion of that salary we're no longer paying you, you know, that we're not, the 100 people we're not paying will all get some sort of a kickback, a percentage or something, but that won't happen until the workers have power again, and that won't happen until we all stay home.
Yes.
Collectively, by the millions.
And I feel like this is the way in which it kind of harkens back to my initial story about my apartment, is why does every single thing have to be, what's the word, when you make that
maximum profit?
Yeah, so efficient. Why is the goal always efficiency to the point of maximum profit and minimum output? Like, this is a company like Disney and Marvel. Marvel is literally the studio that invented billion-dollar movies. And now they're laying off people. Layoffs used to be the idea that they can no longer afford to pay people. now layoffs are, well, we can do without these people so that we can give people, so that we can give our shareholders, which are people who do not contribute a single ounce of creativity to this project, that they're somehow the people that deserve the output from this project. Not like Marvel movies are created by people and funded by people. And the fact that the people that are actually creating it don't get any of the output from it, but the people who just gave the money to do it get 99.9% of the profit and output.
So I don't know this level of business well enough to give you the exact reason why, but I do know that there is a reason why. I remember when I was managing a club, I had this idea to change things that would make it a little bit better for feature comics who are kind of working the road. And if you don't know anything about stand-up comedy, no one's gotten a raise since like 92. Like the feature comic pay has been 150, 100, 100 bucks, 125 bucks a show. Maybe you do five a weekend at a club and you're going to make 600 bucks. And they used to put you up. They barely put you up anymore. You don't get gas money, right? Maybe you're making, maybe now you're getting 200 a show. And I had this idea about like, hey, let's just add $1 a ticket to every seat you sell. And let's say that we're doing this because we want to be sure that the feature acts, the mid-level, the future of comedy, that the people we expect to have 6 years experience, you know, have a place to stay and can afford to eat and they don't have to, you know, sleep on their friend's fart cushion couch while they're a professional who's been doing this for 8 years, right? And the general response was kind of like, number one, we don't have to. But number two, when you are a manager of investments, you are legally obligated to make the most money for your investors. And that's a legal obligation. And
that's so
that can actually, I believe, tie hands about what decisions get made, because you're supposed to be in full faith making the most money you can for the people who have invested in you. If that's not established at the forefront. I read an investment package recently that was like, hey, this is being done without paying people the cheapest and without cranking out things as quick as possible. And it is explicitly stated in the investment package, like, we're not going to be doing it this way, just so you know. Right? And so I think that is part of it. Again, it's fucked.
Definitely.
But I do think that there was this movement to protect the money and to protect the wealthy and to protect the investments and make sure that, you know, people aren't fucking around with your $30,000, you know.
The reason I found out about this law that someone running a business is accountable by law to make sure that they're making any and all decisions with the benefit of the shareholder in mind. I found that out that that was the law after the Luigi Mangione shooting, because basically he shot that guy and there was an uptick after that from that healthcare organization. Basically, they were saying yes to more procedures than usual. And the shareholders sued them, saying that they weren't making decisions with them in mind.
Yeah, no, I mean, nothing is in our favor. Do you know what I mean? Like it's about, I'm going to be like, burn it all down. Burn it down, start over.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North convenience stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
I just have one little history story.
Okay.
That I think applies to this. Do you know the term what a Luddite is?
Oh, yeah.
So the term Luddite
it means someone who is not particularly technologically advanced. Right? Is that the correct use of the word Luddite?
The common understanding of what the term Luddite means is someone who opposes technology or someone who isn't aware of technology. So I guess your grandma who can't open her email, you could be like, oh, she's a bit of a Luddite. But the history of the Luddite movement is so much more complex than that and really applies to what is happening right now. So the Luddite movement began in Nottingham in 1811 during the Industrial Revolution. Okay. Luddites began as a group of skilled weavers and artisans that were worried about being replaced because this was around the invention of automated looms and knitting frames. Basically, what was happening before is that most very highly skilled weavers worked out of their homes and they would be paid by people to make things, to knit things, to weave things. And after the invention of these automated looms and knitting frames, basically huge businesses bought them, put them in warehouses, hired low-wage, unskilled workers because they were able to work the machines without any skills or knowledge. And what this turned into was absolutely horrible conditions in these factories and warehouses that they were working in, horrible products being created, which then turned into damaging the public perception of the field of weavers. So basically, the group took its name from this gentleman whose name was Ned Ludd. He's a folklore figure. There's even this idea that he might have never have been a real person. Ned Ludd is this folklore figure who, around the invention of these knitting frames, went in and smashed them. So basically, they called themselves Luddites, and they would sign letters to factory owners and to the other people in their groups as General Ludd or King Ludd, as an idea that, like, if you don't do what we say in this letter, we're going to start destroying shit. And that's exactly what they did. They're famous for using sledgehammers to destroy this machinery and to protest it, and basically developed this term of collective bargaining by riot.
Big so, fan. And so
me too,
my
me too.
Cutie of the week are the Luddites.
Hell yeah. I think what they were fighting for was, like, they were against worker displacement. They were against wage reductions. They were fighting for quality control. And I feel like we need to be looking to these people for inspiration of what we should be doing in this moment.
I agree wholeheartedly. And there's a reason why we don't hear about this.
Yeah. That was honestly after it all happened. And while it was happening, the reason we think of the term Luddite as some dummy who doesn't understand things is because the government did a propaganda campaign to make these people like, oh, those people aren't. They're not fighting for wages and worker displacement, all these things. They're just dummies who are afraid of technology.
Okay, so our job is to reclaim Luddite and make it the positive thing it is once again.
Exactly.
I'm here for this. You know, homos love to reclaim words. Let's go.
Hey.
Let's do it. All right, cutie of the week, Luddites.
Hell yeah. I think
we did it. Great. I think we did do it. We did it for a while.
Your hot girlfriend is back and you're like, okay, I'm done. It's hot girlfriend time.
I mean, it is hot girlfriend time.
Oh, yeah.
She's cute. She's came back from a photo shoot where she was in lingerie.
Ooh.
I know. There's a Hillary secret. Have you heard?
Yes. Yes.
So, yes, starting Memorial Day weekend, that Sunday, and then I think Thursdays throughout the summer, number one, we're launching Foxy, the queer cabaret for femmes and thems. And right. Number two, the after party will be Hillary's Secret, a women's lingerie party at Grotto Bar.
That is so cool. I love that.
Yeah, no, it's really fun. It's wear whatever you would wear to be sexy. But like, there's literally three men's underwear parties in town every week in the high season. Three different nights for men to show up and make a place smell like balls. And I'm not saying they shouldn't. I'm just saying that let's get some pussy smelled rooms.
Exactly. I love it.
All right, well, we did it, and
hell yeah,
that's all, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, well, see it, listen, like, subscribe, yeah, wherever you get your podcast, tell your friends, and follow on TikTok and Instagram,
and go be a Luddite,
and go be a Luddite. Luddites unite.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Okay, love you.
Queerly.
Queer is dead.
Only at True North stores, new True Rewards members. Stack your savings at the pump. Sign up and earn 10 cents a gallon on your first fill-up. Second fill, get 20 cents off a gallon. Then earn a massive 30 cents off a gallon on your third fill-up. Join now. Find the True Rewards app in your favorite app store, download and click the star to sign up. Must be a new member of both True Rewards and Shell Fuel Rewards to qualify. Limit 20 gallons per fill. Additional terms apply. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.